Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time again for another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live, as always, from the campus of West Virginia University. It's a syndicated show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practices. With the modern marketing wizards that they have on staff, we have many to choose from. Today, we chose Michael Lynch. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going today?
I'm doing
actually
good.
We're really lucky. We have a couple of mics here today.
A couple of mics. That's why I just threw it out. We got a couple of mics on the mic.
Yeah, we do.
So who'd you bring with you today?
Mike Fulton. He is the Director of Public Affairs and Advocacy for Asher Agency. And I want to dive right in because a lot of people are hesitant when it comes to really using government services, when it comes to thinking about government services. Right now, it seems that our political world is so divisive that many people might even be hesitant to kind of consider or think about government services. Why are you so optimistic about why clients should engage with government, particularly in this time of partisanship, apathy, gridlock? People seem to be at odds with each other.
Great question. Public affairs is by far one of the most beneficial yet overlooked tactics in the strategic communications world. I have seen public affairs tactics work time and time again. They might add a new dimension to a campaign, they might put others on the defensive, or push an issue or a project over the finish line. Results speak volumes. Grants awarded, third-party validation of products, services, and programs, successful nominations of our clients to federal advisory boards, earned media placement, members of Congress supporting you on social media, and the receipt from their offices of proactive ideas to work with them to accomplish your organization's mission. As we often say, if you're not at the table, you're more than likely on the menu. Even in times of divisiveness, you still want to be involved with government.
That's great, Mike. If you could speak up just a little bit, we might be able to hear you just a little bit better. But could you give us a few examples of maybe incidences you run into where the government has either helped or hurt in a communication strategy, communication campaign?
I get asked this question a lot, so I decided to write a column for the Public Relations Society of America, a 10-question quiz for all communicators and clients to look at 10 specific strategies that they might utilize in their public relations and strategic communications campaigns. Would a popular mayor, governor, senator, or other public figure enhance your message platform by mentioning your client and its interests or product service in a favorable way? Would tax incentives, training dollars, or other government inducements benefit your client? Would making your client's product or service the gold standard through legislation or rulemaking boost sales? Is there a regulation, rulemaking process, or a bill that you'd like to stop in its tracks? We know how to do that. Would a government contract or a subcontract opportunity please your client? Would oversight of a competing product, process, or service shine the light on irregularities that would be helpful to your client and your group? What about a coalition of like-minded companies, trade associations, or nonprofit organizations working together bipartisan manner to carry your campaign messages? How about if you had your client appointed to a government advisory committee where he or she could sit at the table with the federal agency people that oversee their agency or fund their agency and help them make priorities? What about a government award or a proclamation that would recognize your company and boost your reputation? And then always one of the most popular areas is in funding. Would additional funding through a grant, loan, or other financing mechanism jumpstart a project, program, or add to the outreach effort for your client? For most every profession, product, or service issue, or individual seeking to be positioned as a trusted leader, one or more of these public affairs tactics can greatly enhance the overall success of your goals. Government should be used or be viewed as an asset and not as a liability in the integrated marketing communications community. I encourage strategic communications all over to look at these opportunities, not to overlook them.
That's great, Mike. When anybody starts talking about money, they get my attention. My ears kind of pick up. What is the first step in maybe understanding what the tax incentives available are, or how to apply for a grant or a loan or some other financing mechanism? I mean, where do you start?
I think a consultant can help guide. I worked 10 years on Capitol Hill, so I think a great deal like a congressional aide. I think that's why I prove value to my clients. Before we even approach the congressional office, a consultant with the right kind of experience can help you, or somebody trained in government relations and public affairs can help guide a client or an organization through the process of working with government funding, tax incentives, or other opportunities that I mentioned previously. You really need to look at how Congress works, how the state government works, the short attention spans of public elected leaders and their staff, how overworked they are. So you need to make it easy on them. So doing research, developing a one- or two-page white paper outlining who, what, where, when, why, and clearly outlining the local benefits and the global benefits to the project or request that you might have. Developing that ask so that when you're asked by the congressperson or their staff what you want, it's important to be able to answer that question concisely and authoritatively. But also, you're looking for their advice. So be flexible enough to work with them on modifications of strategies that they might have in mind.
I think one thing that we really do forget is that the government really is there to serve us. I mean, we're not at the service of the government. The government's there to really serve us. But I've got a question. How really are the capabilities of a communications professional, how do they go hand in hand, or how are they similar to those of government relation practitioners?
Well, I truly believe in the convergence of strategic communications and advocacy skills. I've observed over the years that there are 10 shared skills of our profession that include listening, talking, writing, research, being concise, being deadline-driven, able to work with technology, having strategic decision-making capabilities, being able to set goals and measurement tactics to guide your campaign, and then behaving ethically. These are the shared skills between strategic communications and public affairs and government relations practitioners. We often think in silos, but we really shouldn't. All communicators should strive to know and understand government better. You just can't respond to your boss or to your client, "I don't do that. That's not for me." Well, you need to talk to somebody else, because they may take their business to somebody else and not come back.
What do you think are the basic needs before really engaging with a government relationship campaign, or maybe a agency like yourself that can help walk you through the system?
We always start with our clients with a co-signed letter of agreement that spells out the scope of work, expectations, the timeline of our engagement, and the fees and expenses that might be undertaken or needed to achieve the task. Many people aren't intimately familiar with the inner workings of government. Mostly what they know are from movies or TV shows, books, or textbooks back in college. And government just doesn't work that way. So we really do try to help our clients understand the process, jump right in with meetings with their congressional people after we've conducted some research and put together a strategy. And sometimes the results can be rather impressive.
That's great. A word that you used when you were talking about the 10 shared skills that, again, really caught my attention was listening. What does listening really mean in this context?
I go to a lot of meetings with clients on Capitol Hill or at federal agencies. And most of the time, I've prepared the client to do the talking. So I'm a facilitator in introducing the meeting And then I sit back and I'm a listener and note taker. And then I can interject as needed. But I take copious notes during these sessions so that follow-up can be done properly. And they're just little things that matter. I'll just tell you, today I noticed on Twitter that a congressional member that works with one of our community college clients, her dog was voted cutest on Capitol Hill.
All right.
Now, every meeting we've had in that office since she's been elected, she's a freshman member, so it's less than 2 years now, Zoe, the dog, has been in the office running around. The one thing you don't want to do is kick the dog out of the way, because that can ruin a meeting even before it gets started. So I sent that information to my client because the little things matter. This is a people business that we're in, and listening and not just going in and talking and being demanding. Like you say, it is our government. They are here to serve us. They are using our tax dollars, and we should care about that. However, it's a people business, and we need to be respectful, professional, and we also need to be thoughtful. So I am confident that our client is going to send a note, or next week when we go into that office, they're going to bring a dog treat or some kind of recognition of Zoe being the cutest dog on Capitol Hill.
It's funny. You never really know what is going to make the deal or, you know, really solidify a relationship. And sometimes it is so simple as taking care of the small things you see in someone's office and dealing with somebody's personality. Speaking of concise, before we go to our break, I'm familiar with all of these just piles and piles and piles of paper that seem to be in government. What do you mean by being concise?
Just because the government might put together a committee report that's 182 pages doesn't mean you need to bring in the New York phone book. Capitol Hill has actually gone a great deal paperless. The government has established a lot more websites, infographics, social media campaigns to reach out and create a two-way street with their constituencies, and we have to respond to that. So we need to come in with shorter proposals, not bring in the entire brochure, the catalog of courses at a university, or all the products that a company might make. We need to come in and be razor sharp and concise in our presentations as well as our requests for assistance.
You know, I think you're right. When I really think about it, I've got to guess, I respect the people in government and the fact that they've got to be time constrained also. I mean, I can see a project that I'd want to push through or one of your clients might want to push through. And it's the most important thing in the world, obviously, to that client. But to a congressperson, to a city administrator, to a mayor, whoever, it may just be another thing that they need to think about that day. And obviously is not going to be their top priority. Mike, I think we've set the stage here really, really nicely. Let's go to a break and we'll talk about some more things when we get back.
And just a quick break to remind you that the program today is being brought to you by West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program, first of its kind in the country. It's a graduate-level program that focuses on strategic thinking, critical problem-solving, and informed decision-making. Data Marketing Communications Program prepares you for a career in the ever-changing field of data marketing communications by learning innovative tactics from award-winning faculty like those we're talking with today. To learn more, it's pretty simple. You just got to type in 9 letters. DMC for Data Marketing Communications, WVU for West Virginia University, and EDU. So dmc.wvu.edu will get you to the site. And with that, let's get you back to the conversation with Michael and the other Michael, Michael Fulton.
Excellent. And I always like to give a little commercial about the data marketing communication. It's an area where marketing is really going and it's really becoming more and more data driven. And the better you are at analyzing data, reading data, understanding data, compiling data, the better chance you have of really making a big impact in your marketing communications.
Can I ask you one quick question about that when you bring it up? And it and I'd love to hear your guest comment on this as well. Can you tell a story with data? And when you go to government, is the data even more important, or is it the personal connection you make with these people and the appeal you make to, you know, jobs and everything else here? Are they data-driven like everybody else?
Now, Michael, you had talked about research earlier in the 10 shared skills. So exactly how ready do you have to be when it comes from a data point of view?
Data is very important. And the more you can boil it down to the common denominator of the constituency the government official serves. So if it would be a mayor, they would be more concerned about the city limits and the people that live within the city limits. If it's a county commissioner, it could be expanded out to the county. If it's a governor or a U.S. senator, then it would be statewide data would be very helpful. If it's a member of Congress, you need to look at those gerrymandered districts, and it's very hard to calculate data sometimes by congressional district. But if you can pinpoint to them the degree that a problem or the benefits a project might create as it relates to their population. If you walk in and talk about something that's going on in Africa and there is no connection to their district, then you must look for another connection, like a committee assignment, a congressional caucus they serve on. You're always looking for not only data, important, compelling data that shows why this problem needs their attention among all the other programs and projects that are going on, but you also need to connect it to that person. That's why if a member of Congress has cancer or a disease, has an incident, boy, the organizations, the nonprofits that deal with that particular disease or whatever, use that as a poster child in their next campaign, and they approach that member of Congress about being a validator for them. And then it generally results in more funding and attention to that given situation. Government does tend to respond to accidents or problems or catastrophes. I mean, just look at the catastrophic changes and positive things that were done after 9/11 or after a military conflict or the opioid crisis when Ebola was first on the move, and then some Americans and other folks had caught it and were brought to U.S. facilities to be cured or at least have it researched and evaluated more carefully. So you try to tie your government relations or your issue-based communications to data, geographies, and connectivities to the individuals that you're trying to reach. It doesn't mean you have to reach all 435 members of the House of Representatives, all 100 senators, all 50 governors, etc. You just may only need one or two champions to get something to happen quietly behind the scenes.
That's great, Mike. As we move on here, can you give me an example or two how a client has used public affair tactics to make a significant difference in the way they're doing business?
I've been very blessed over the years to work with some fantastic clients, and it seems that just about every client that I come in contact with, there's already some connectivity to government or some ability that government can become involved in an initiative. We did a digital campaign in 2018 at Asher for a nonprofit that focuses on lead acid battery recycling. And you'd say, wow, what a topic. Well, lead acid batteries in our vehicles are the most recycled commodity in the world. In North America, 99% of batteries are recycled, and 98% of that battery can be reused. So that reduces the cost to the consumer and the cost to the manufacturer. They very much want, we all want batteries to be recycled. They're also not good to be out in the environment. Our client wanted to appeal to consumers to recycle the remaining 1% that are still not recycled every year, and that represents 2 million batteries. So we created the 2 million battery campaign, developed a hashtag, a landing page on their website, a digital strategy that had both social media and paid search and other paid advertising components for the client. We targeted to the states that had our partnering retailers, these automotive retailers that would accept the batteries, AutoZone, Walmart, and groups like that. And we launched the campaign on Capitol Hill with the U.S. Senate Auto Caucus. Senator Rob Portman of Ohio was instrumental in getting the room, helping facilitate the meeting. We did a panel discussion with our client moderating, and we had an audience of congressional aides, federal agencies, trade associations, company representatives that were in Washington, reporters, and it was just a great kickoff to this campaign that generated some compelling numbers. We ended up reaching 7.3 million people in 2018 in just 10 months with our message. If even we only needed a portion of them to recycle a battery to hit our goal. So it was really quite compelling. The government also cares a lot about the next generation of batteries that will be in electric cars, hydrogen vehicles, solar panels. Energy storage is a huge issue, and batteries play a big role in this. So government at all levels is quite interested in supplying our energy demand. That's probably one great example.
That really is a great example. It sounds like a wonderful cause. Just briefly in the time we have left, can you tell me a little bit about the Asher Agency and what your role is?
Asher Agency was founded in 1974 in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's grown into an agency network. We have 60 employees, $55 million in revenue. And while I handle public affairs in the nation's capital in our D.C. office, we have 8 other offices in 7 states. We provide advertising, public relations, digital and website solutions, and we have a lot of fun and do a lot of rewarding work. And we go through that 10-issue quiz about how to use public affairs in every campaign so that we utilize government at Asher.
Excellent. And again, that was Mike Fulton. He is the Director of Public Affairs and Advocacy for Asher Agency. And thank you so much for joining me today, Michael.
No, I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to another example of WVU Marketing Communications Today, right here in the Funnel Radio Network for at-work listeners like you.